There'll probably be about 20 new places open by the time you get here. Every day there's something new and exciting, from small, creative fondas, which is like a trattoria or a bistro, to fancy new places.
Hello, this is Harry Hawk, and this is Talking About Everything, and we are here with my new friend, Nicholas Gilman. Nicholas is based in Mexico City and is a food writer, a food critic, an author. Nick, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me. I would like to let you know that I am the author of the only guidebook to eating out Mexico City, which is called Good Food in Mexico City, Food Stalls, Fondas, and Fine Dining. I'm originally from New York, and I've been here in Mexico for almost 20 years, and I love living here.
It's awesome, and I think what's really happened here is that Mexico, and particularly Mexico City, has started to gain the awareness of foodies from all over the world, perhaps, and hopefully your book has been a big and growing part of that.
Well, it really has. I think I was a little ahead of my time. Published the book first in 2007. And in the last 3 or 4 years, we've been in the middle of a renaissance of restaurants and chefs and food scenes and all kinds of amazing festivals and expos. And we're really at the peak of it right now. There's just new places opening all the time. I can barely keep up with it. And we've really become an amazing destination, a world-class destination for eating. Mexico City is dining and eating is something that we're trying to push as a reason for tourism here.
It's fantastic. I spoke to my friend Chef Ong here in New York. He was jealous. I spoke to my friend Mitchell Davis over at the James Beard Foundation, and he said he hadn't been down in a while and wanted to know what I learned because, well, yes, as I have mentioned to you, Nick, on a prior call, I'm getting ready to head down there on January 2nd. So it's going to be an interesting trip, and that's really why I wanted to have this conversation, to kind of get some professional advice on where to go and what to do.
Well, believe me, there will probably be about 20 new places open by the time you get here, because it seems to be every day there's something new and exciting happening, from small, creative, what we call fondas, which is like a trattoria or a bistro, to fancy new places, to old fashioned places that I discover, like taco stands in the middle of the market. I mean, it's an enormous city, and I don't think I'll ever be finished searching for new hidden spots. On every level, it's really exciting for me and for somebody to visit. But you might need help, because it's an enormous place.
That's the idea, and we've talked before. When I come down there, we're gonna do some interviews together, and I've got myself a nice hotel room where I can, you know, with a couch, and I can interview people, and I have a mobile studio as well with me. It fits into my backpack, so we can go wherever and record in vitro.
Okay, great. I can help you with that. There are a lot of chefs coming here from all over the country, even from all over the world, and opening their versions of there's something I like to call modern Mexican cuisine. It's the new Mexican cuisine. It's people who are taking advantage of the phenomenal ingredients we have here, products we have, artisanal products, also utilizing traditions, Mexican traditions, recipes, ideas that come from the classic Mexican cooking. So it's a combination. It's postmodern, and it's really exciting. And it's all influenced by what's happened in Spain and what's happened in the U.S. But chefs down here have their own take on it. Regional restaurants are starting to become more popular here in Mexico City. Places from the coast, from Baja California, from the southern states, from the northern states. It's all happening here.
Well, I love it. I love that there really isn't an authentic Mexican food in the same way there isn't one kind of hamburger in America or one kind of pizza, you know, that it is a large country and each little region, each part of the country has its own ingredients, its own methods, its own perspective. But then, like a large city, like New York, you know, sort of everything finds its way here, you know, that everything is finding its way to Mexico City. But I actually have a question because I sent an email. I tried to get a reservation at one of the more famous places, and they told me they're going to be closed the first 2 weeks of January. I'm wondering, is that something that I'm going to find more and more as I start looking around, or is that just that particular restaurant?
In terms of being closed at that time of year, or in terms of just not being able to get a reservation?
Being closed at that time of the year.
No, that is not a time when people when places close as a rule around here. There isn't really any particular places close at Christmas, New Year's. They close during Holy Week, which we call Semana Santa. Many places are closed then. That's in April. But January, that's just bad luck. I don't know which place you said. But most places should be open then. The city is very quiet until January 6th, which is Three Kings Day. And then it comes back to life. But there's still people around.
Okay, great. So I was a little bit nervous about that. But you know.
No, I wouldn't worry about that.
Excellent. I'm going to continue then to start making some more reservations and really trying to get in at night to some of the hot spots. But from your book or from your recent experience, myself or anybody was headed there, I was wondering if you wanted to quickly mention any particular places across the range from the fine to the, you know, my own personal taste, just so you know, I love street food, simple, you know, what I would call peasant food, and I love the high end. In general, I often don't eat in the middle when it's something that I could make myself. When I travel, I'm a little bit more open because, well, I don't travel with a kitchen.
Mm-hmm. And what's the question?
So the question is, did you have a few places that you might recommend to me or anybody else who's traveling from the different categories, so to speak?
I do. I mean, it's a little difficult to name them offhand. I'm always finding new places. There are a few mainstream. I don't want to say mainstream. That's not the right word. Well-known restaurants that are always recommendable, such as Nico's. I mean, this is a sort of a middle to upper range type of restaurant. There's Pujol, which is the most famous of all for creative modern Mexican cuisine, but that's an institution. I think it's very interesting. You can take it or leave it. It's expensive. It's become kind of a tourist place, but it's still good. And it's still, if you haven't been there, you might want to go there. That's like the top, the most famous of all. But there are others in that category, such as one called Casis that I like a lot, another one called Limos Negros, that are very, very good and less known, and I think worth checking out.
And that's what I'm looking for, Nick, is your advice. We have mentioned it here in the podcast. If you send me links or I'll find them, I'll put them in the show notes. And I know you're writing on an ongoing basis about these, and we'll have links to any of your writing as well. Of course, a link to Amazon where people can find your book.
Sure.
What else comes to mind? And again, I price doesn't matter to me, but I would rather at an up-and-coming place that hasn't quite gotten the training wheels off than eat at the most fancy place that's become robotic and in decline. You know what I mean? If that...
Absolutely, yeah. I understand that. That's the whole point. I mean, there are places that are on the cutting edge but have not sort of settled into that institutional malaise. And there's also new hip places. You know, what's exciting here is that there are these small places that are...
Can you name some of them just so that people have this as a reference?
A new place called Fonda Fina. There's a new place called Fonda Mayora that just is opening this week. There's a place called Cauro, C-A-U-R-O. There's a place called Husset that's kind of a hotspot already. What else? There's a place called La Docena that is a young chef from Guadalajara who has opened a branch of it here. Another one called Conchita, which is a chef from Baja California. These are just the sort of the hip, hot places. There's also the old-fashioned ones that have always been great and always will be great. There's a restaurant called El Hidalguense, which is does barbacoa, and it's only open Friday, Saturday, and Sunday because barbacoa is something that you have on weekends, and it's probably been there for 40 years. There's El Bajío, which is famous for kind of all around Mexican food, but particularly for carnitas and for mole. The owner of it, Carmen Tititia, has written cookbooks and become famous, but this place is just a popular families. It's only open during the day, not at night. So these are a couple of the older institutions that are still fantastic and still worth going to. And then there are smaller places like that that are just neighborhood places. There's the Casa del Toño, which does pozole, and you will go in there and spend all of $5, and have an incredible meal.
I love the variety. Again, we see it in New York when you can go for the $1 dumplings and you can go for the $500 sushi. There's the range.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to have a transcript of this made, and that will be part of the show notes. It will come a few days after probably this gets out on the podcast.
Okay.
I will go in and I'll also, as we edit that transcript and put everything in, I'll try to put in links to these places if they have websites or there's an article, if you've blogged about them.
Yes.
I will link to your blog. I'm speaking to you. We're on a podcast. Other folks can hear us eventually when they listen in. But this is sort of the plan that I hope when I get down there again, I'll be there from the 2nd to 9th, as much time as you have available. We'll schedule some interviews, and it'll be you, myself, and whomever we're speaking with, and we'll just, again, we can have just a conversation about food or about technique, about food sources, about anything. It's just a conversation. It doesn't really have to be a hard-nosed interview, but when we're done, we can pull these transcripts, and we'll be able to have kind of a rich documentation of what's been done. You'll have obviously access to all of that if that helps in anything that you're doing.
Okay.
I'm just excited that you're open to trying that out with me.
Sure. Yeah. Sounds fun.
I know you're going to be traveling between now and then.
Yes.
That's why we're trying to squeeze this in. But is there anything else I should think about? I'm going to be staying there just for essentially 7 or 8 nights. I know I can easily fill up the schedule. Is there anything that I should know as a tourist, where to go, where not to go, or even something to avoid in terms of food? Or do I need to drink bottled water? What are the typical tourist questions I think that anybody would have?
Address those questions in my book about where to eat, what not to eat. The thing about Mexico is it's much cleaner than it used to be. They will serve water that's been treated, bottled water. And you really don't have to worry too much about that. Some people still get sick anyway because there's just different bacteria in the air here. But people have learned a lot about cleanliness and hygiene, and it's really improved in the last 25 years that I've been here. But I think you might want to, as far as street food goes, stick to places that I recommend because they're tried and true places that I know and that I haven't gotten sick in myself.
And I do have a copy of your book, and I'm starting to go through it, and I will be bringing it with me. So,
and I think you have to take precautions that you would take in any city in the world. I don't think Mexico City is particularly dangerous for people who are for tourists, as long as you don't do silly things that you wouldn't do in New York or Paris or any other city where you're not going to be walking 4 a.m. and hopping into any old taxi. And we have Uber here, and I highly recommend that visitors use it because it's safer. And certain neighborhoods you won't go to at night that I wouldn't go to at night. That's life in the city. There's the worst thing that happens to people usually here is pickpocketing. There are real expert pickpocketers. So. But you have to be careful of that. Sitting in a cafe and leaving your iPhone out on the table is not a good idea, for example, outside. Because somebody will come by and steal it, but that could happen anywhere. I feel safer than I used to feel when I lived in New York back in the 80s and 90s.
Toby, where you used to live, I used to live right around that area as well. And that area and many others have so improved. And I love that this renaissance that has taken place in Brooklyn and in Queens is also taking place south of the border in Peru and in Mexico City?
We're like New York was 20 years ago. We are in a time when younger people can still afford to live here, to open businesses. It reminds me of how they were doing that back in New York in the 90s. They were opening small restaurants on the Lower East Side and then later in Brooklyn. And I think it's gotten kind of out of hand real estate wise in New York. I don't know if there's any place left where anybody can do that anymore.
Chefs are leaving New York. My friend, erstwhile partner, Alan Harding and Jim Mamari opened up Patois on Smith Street. The original rent that they paid was $800 a month. And that was in the 90s. You can't touch anything like that anywhere that you would actually want to open a place. You've given me a bunch of recommendations in the podcast. I've got your book. We're going to talk more close to that event. Is there anything else that you might want to suggest to me in terms of, as I'm doing my planning beyond your book, what I might look for online? Should I be using OpenTable to make reservations? Or I was certainly planning on using Uber, and I'm really glad that you've confirmed that that's the way to go.
I think there's the book that my partner did, Jim Johnston, and it's called A Guide for the Curious Traveler. And it's an excellent personal guide. It's actually the book that I started working on writing the food section. He just did a new edition of it. And I highly recommend that you read that because it has all the information you really need. It doesn't have everything that Lonely Planet does, but it's personal and it's better and it has walking tours. And it's really kind of a book that's by somebody who lives here as opposed to a book by that most of the mainstream guidebooks are, you know, send somebody down to just do the research and slap them together. But this is really somebody who lives here and knows the city. So that's what I recommend as far as reading goes.
I'll certainly put a link to Jim's book in the show notes as well.
Other than that, I think you just got to come and experience it. This is crazy city. Like any crazy city, I love it. It has a lot of energy. As I say, it reminds me of the energy that New York used to have that it doesn't quite have for me anymore. It's become much more staid and moneyed, and there's exciting stuff happening in all kinds of level of society and culture.
I'm excited. It's going to be a lot of fun. I certainly even thought about renting an Airbnb so I could cook while I was down there. But then I've decided, at least for this trip, I'm going to be in a hotel. I'm sure I'll be back, and I probably be jealous of all the local chefs as they're working with all this amazing produce and all of that. I guess that would be, if I had one last question on my mind, I know in New York that we've really built up this artisanal community, both within New York City, the stereotypical Bushwickian who's making pickles, to just all the farms in Jersey and Westchester and up into the Hudson River Valley, and 300 miles around this area takes us quite far afield. But we have all of that amazing produce and product coming into the city. Has the same thing been happening around Mexico City in the last 20 years?
Absolutely. There are people, I would say most of the new, more fine dining type restaurants are using local produce, organic produce. They have producers who are growing things right in within the limits of Mexico City itself in Xochimilco that are small producers of artisanal and organic produce and artisanal products like cheeses and chocolate and corn products and all kinds of stuff. It's amazing what's going on here. And the craft beer and craft, that's the right word, mezcal and tequilas. That is very much happening here. Absolutely. And there are organic markets, and it's amazing how that has exploded as well, because it wasn't really a thing even 3 or 4 years ago.
Well, you're going to convince me to come back sooner than later, just from the description, Nick. And I am so excited and just looking forward to it. And I just want to thank you again for taking the time out of your schedule today to record this, and then just planning ahead, thanking you for hanging out when I do get to the city. and Mexico City. So one city to another, it's going to be a lot of fun. And I just want to give you the opportunity right now, if there's anything I haven't asked that you want to mention, as well as websites and plugs, and if you just want to take a moment and go ahead and let everybody know once again where to find you and everything.
Well, you can find me at goodfoodmexicocity.com. I've written for the press all over the world in English, so if you Google me, you'll find me. But I think the best advice I can say is to come to Mexico City. It's a fantastic, when you're coming in January is a great time. The weather is really always good here. There's never a bad time. I just stay, besides food, there's a lot more going on than that. There's music, there's culture, there's art, there's fantastic museums. And I just recommend that people come.
I know there's a big EDM scene there, which is exciting to me.
Absolutely. So I'm looking forward to your coming. And I think we're going to have some fun.
I'm going to get this episode out as soon as I can. And anything you want to send me, any notes or anything to include in the show or something to link to, just shoot me an email in the next couple of days, or if there's a headshot or anything. And I'm just going to wrap up the show right now by saying, this is Harry Hawk, and you have been listening to Talking About Everything. I hope that everybody has a great week. This is Harry Hawk saying bye-bye.
My name is Chuck Fresh, and I am being paid to thank you for listening to Talking About Everything with Harry Hawk. Harry wants to hear from you on Twitter at HHawk or HarryHawk@gmail.com. And now, a word from our sponsor, Life Extension Coach, and favorite chef. Hawk Digital Marketing is focused on bringing brands and people together. We build communities of interest based on trust and transparency, where consumers and brands can converse, learn, discuss, or solve problems together, while creating a long-term connection, entanglement, between you and your customers. Once connected, we help you engage, communicate, sell, present, educate, and inform. Evolve your communications with us. HawkSocialMarketing.com.